Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. It's Mary Lurson. I'm coming to you live from the NAMM Show here in Anaheim, California. And we are here at our Talking Up Music Education studio here at the NAMM Show. So thank you for joining us here at EnterTalk Radio. Please let anyone and everyone know that we're live on Facebook at EnterTalk Radio. And I'm delighted to welcome Hunter Hayes.
Good morning.
Who is not even an emerging singer-songwriter performer, but an established singer-songwriter performer.
I feel more like an emerging.
Well, I don't know. I saw quite a few record sale numbers out there. So
There's a few. Yeah. But
welcome.
Thank
First
you.
Time ever at the NAMM Show. Welcome
yeah.
to the NAMM Show.
It's Thank
great.
You. I appreciate it.
So with all of our artists that we chat with, because our theme is talking about music education and the value of it in people's lives and where they first learn music and their journey to become a musician, we talk about the origin story. You know, mm-hmm. how did you start learning music, and was it available to you in school, and did you have teachers that really influenced you along the way? Love to hear about that.
For me, it's kind of an off-the-beaten-path discovery story. It wasn't like I grew up in church. I didn't really have a great music education background, which is, I think, why I believe in it so much. You know, it's that thing that you didn't have growing up that you want everybody else in the world to have, mostly because, you know, my path to music was very sort of like, I kind of had to find it on my own. My parents weren't musical and my family wasn't musical. And so finding music was very much something that I was kind of just like independent and sort of alone in. I think that's why anytime the words music education comes up, I'm pretty passionate about it, because it for me, it's as much about finding oneself as it is about learning mm-hmm. music. I grew up in a very musically rich culture. Like in Louisiana, we're very passionate about history and heritage, and there's a very traditional music.
That's a big time. It's
foundation.
Kind of in the water there.
It's definitely in the water. There's everything from Cajun to there's a huge blues presence and all kinds of stuff down there that just doesn't, honestly, there's a lot of stuff down there that doesn't really exist anywhere else.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
It's this little hidden pocket of the world.
There's a sound too.
Yeah, there's definitely a sound. So, and the best part about it is, you know, when I started getting interested, you could go anywhere and see a live band, you know, at a restaurant, or we don't really need an excuse to have a festival outside in Louisiana. We just have a festival.
So where in Louisiana did you grow up?
I grew up in Brobridge, Louisiana. So just outside of Lafayette.
Okay.
And so it's super far south, and there is a festival every day for something. So I played outside at fairs and festivals my whole life.
It's all about food. It's all about food
at the end of the day.
It's all hanging out, right?
At the end of the day, yeah. So, and the thing about it was growing up around, going to see these bands, my family, which I got a toy accordion when I was two. My grandmother noticed that I was taking things around the house and making them into instruments. So she was like, well, I'm going to start him on accordion. So I got a toy accordion. I started, apparently, I don't remember this at all. This is just what I've heard my parents say, and this is the most consistent information I could gather up. But I started kind of like learning things by ear and playing them. So there was like two or three songs. I was standing side stage at this guy's performance, and he pointed at me and asked my dad, he was like, this, would he want to come up and play? And my dad was like, yeah, he knows this song, and this song. And so I went up and I played and I sang, and I just fell in love with that feeling, being on stage, being there. And I started sitting in with that band more regularly, going on the road with that band.
This is kind of in hometown, right? Hometown territory.
Ish, right? Yeah. I mean, we would travel to Texas. We'd travel to all around.
But the band was hometown, right?
For sure.
So you kind of bumped into an informal music education.
Exactly.
There was no every third grader gets to play an instrument we're going to have music. You're going to learn how to read music. That just kind of wasn't available then.
Yeah. Well, not where I went to school. It wasn't really a thing.
Right.
You know, it was all about sports. So it was a different environment growing up, and I had to kind of find it on my own. Yeah.
But obviously it was in you, right? It's something that
Yeah, which really catches me off guard because, I mean, they're just this last Christmas, my uncle actually gave me, I'm into timepieces, I like watches, he gave me a timepiece that belonged to my great-grandfather, who apparently played an instrument. I was very passionate about playing accordion. But you have to go that far back to find anyone who's remotely interested in music. Mm-hmm. So I get, my guess is it's just been kind of like, it's been pent up for multiple generations, right. And it's just kind of like, I don't know.
So was the accordion the kind that's used in a Louisiana Cajun?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is so cool. Do you still play it?
Diatonic melodeon.
Oh, that is awesome.
Well,
did you bring one? No.
I
think that is that's a sound.
I haven't played it in 10 years.
Maybe you should.
I haven't touched it.
Maybe you should pull that out. Part of your heritage story, right?
Yeah. It's beautiful to have it as part of my story. But
who knows? Who knows where it's going to fit in?
Yeah, you never
know. As you keep creating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I morphed to guitar at some point.
Yeah.
Right? You're a great guitar player.
Well, I think all the stuff I was into, everybody was playing guitars. So it was like the cool thing. And I wanted to be like them, watching like Garth Brooks and Brooks and Dunn and watching like Brian White and people like that. So I wanted to play guitar and I got my first guitar when I was 6. And I never put it down. That became kind of my home base.
Rest is history, quote unquote, right?
Sure, yeah. Right. I mean, it's just finding, it went from that to like, it went from wanting to learn how to play it to wanting to kind of find a voice. And there was one guy named Turtle. And I've mentioned him in enough interviews. By now, I hope he knows how much of an influence he was on me. But I don't think, up until probably a year ago, he probably had no idea. But he played a Strat. Through a PB Classic 50 or a Classic 30, and just had this really cool, clean, but kind of just this awesome, like, I don't know how to describe it, but this awesome, like, compressed distortion tone. And I was obsessed with that thing. And still to this day, I chase that sound because out of all the guitar players that I've studied, like, he had my favorite sound thing.
Mm. Great. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that something really gelled in you and moved you forward pretty early in life.
Yeah.
So how did you get through high school?
Well, the only way I got through high school
was... What was high school like with someone?
Lonely.
With all this energy, right?
Yeah, well, lonely. Yeah. Well, my friends weren't at school. I had a few friends at school, but I connected most with the people that I ended up playing music with on the weekend.
Yeah.
Who inevitably were like probably twice my age or, whatever.
So you got through high school. Music was sustaining you. You had to do that, right? You had to do
the
high school.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I found songwriting.
Yeah.
It was kind of going through the first like really emotional stages of your life where you're starting to feel things you've never felt, whether that's good or pain, and that's where I discovered songwriting.
Yeah,
I had to figure out a way to kind of it had to be more than a journal. Somebody had to hear it,
right?
Well,
we hope in our work at the NAMM Foundation that every school that if you went back to high school, there would be at least an acknowledgement of this creative process, and that there was a place for you. Maybe there was a club or a gathering or a teacher or a technology program that would, and we're finding that more and more. Because that energy of what you bring into the world and what you had early just needs to be recognized.
Yeah, right? Well, I think there's so many young people.
And I still bet there's a big group that thinks you were the coolest kid in school.
Disagree.
Well, I don't know.
You're so kind to say that.
You just didn't find one another. But
that's such a very kind approach to that.
I would like you to go back and think about that because I think that we're learning now more about the world and people who are quiet and introspective and are creating something that everyone really, really admires that because everyone is a piece of that.
Well, I think if anything, there's a portion of finding music that forces you to kind of be vulnerable to yourself, to kind of be true to oneself. And I do think that, the one thing that I was grateful for is that I found it so young. I didn't have to wake up one day in high school and say, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? I knew, even though I had no idea how I was going to make money on it. And that in of itself is part of the biggest part of the story is that was never really a thought. It was just kind of it was a vision and you go, you move. Yeah. That's the mission. There's no like, this is how it works or how is it going to work or fear-based. Because if it was fear-based, I mean, if I had found it in high school, I'd have given myself every reason not to do it. Same with middle school. I'm grateful that I found it in elementary school or like even younger because at that point it was so ingrained in me. There was nothing that could take me away from it.
Yeah. And as a former teacher, you must know I'm a former teacher the way I'm talking to you, right? but as a former teacher who found the greatest happiness teaching in elementary school at the end of my teaching time, I believe every child has that.
Yeah.
And it just gets kind of rubbed out of them by junior high, senior high.
Yeah.
But, and again, I really think that over time that that there's been more of an acknowledgement, you know, and I always tease folks, you know, nerd is really in now. Nerd is really in.
I think it's always been in.
I think it's always been in. And I think your sense of isolation as you were developing, I think now that's being acknowledged more.
Yeah.
Is that this individuality is just, it's kind of the basics.
Yeah, out of
this
fear.
This crowd stuff, you know, putting everybody into the same, everybody's just doing this and this and this.
Yeah.
And I'm in and I'm not. I think that's the next, you know, we need to write a song about that.
Well, you know, we were actually talking about this last night. My buddy and I went to a movie and we got out and I'm like, I was like, I have this giant list of movies that I have to see. Not just like the big superhero movies, the franchise movies, the things that everybody's talking about. I'm talking like artistic works of absolute beauty.
And there's loner movies too that are very cool that deal with the same themes.
And I feel like we've got more of that lately. And but my only fear is that I don't want being a nerd to become a trend.
No.
I want it to be I hope it is.
I think it's deeper than that. I know that isolation that maybe was part of your development creatively. I think this is the plus of technology. Everybody gets to be themselves.
Yeah. True. Very much.
Right?
I agree.
You know, or if you don't want to be yourselves, you get to be whatever avatar you decide you want to be. And that has all sorts of sides to it, too.
That's a whole other conversation.
But that authenticity is kind of the currency now.
Ooh, authenticity is a currency. Who was I just reading that said that? And I highlighted it.
I think that's kind of the...
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know. You know, it's I don't know the book, but I also know that that's, you know, the trending.
Yeah.
You know, there's some, because we've had this mishmash of what avatar am I today, right? Versus, well, I'm going to take some risks with my art.
I think my only prayer is that it's not a trend. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's a songwriter thing. As soon as you think of it, you say it before it leaves you.
Right.
But I think I just hope it's not a trend, because trends tend to be cool regardless of whether people understand it or not. And I think
I don't think this could survive a trend.
Yeah.
I think it might be a trend, but it'll be identified really quickly as not being authentic.
I hope so. I hope the understanding is there. But yeah, I do think it's beautiful that the individuality thing has really been kind of shown a beautiful spotlight this last year.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it in the movies. We've seen it in so many different ways. And that true transparency has been kind of lifted up.
So you're on I would call kind of a roll right now, right? You're putting out a lot of stuff. Right?
We're doing a lot of
things. It feels right. It's authentic, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing it because you're generating it. So just a brief question about the creative process. I mean, do you walk around with a notebook? Are you, you know, do you have, you know, I love that 8 Mile movie with Eminem sitting on all the buses, writing.
It's so inspiring.
That you can see the you get a glimpse into the process.
Yeah.
Because then we see the guy on the stage and goes, well, I want to do that, but I don't want to be that reflective every minute of every day. That's just too much darn reflectiveness, you know. But, you know, the process that you've generated a lot. You're a young artist, truly.
And I feel like I haven't said half of the things that I want to say.
Yeah, so how does that push out? You know,
I've kind of struggled with it, because when I first moved to town, there was no agenda. Nobody was watching. And so I could kind of say anything I want. And that's how we ended up with the debut record. Past that, I can't blame it on anybody. I can't blame it on the business. I can't blame it on pressure. It was all on me. I thought, well, why would anybody want to hear that? And immediately this filter became more powerful than the creative. And I've been working since then, basically, and without knowing it, and it was an issue without me knowing it. And I was trying to work past it. And then I finally had to just identify it as an issue and say, okay, this is a flaw. This is something that I've built in myself and I have to undo it. And so I've worked really hard over the last, like, I guess year, but specifically the last 6 months to really like tear it away. Mm. And I feel like even starting this year, I kind of started from a really scary place of like, absolutely no, like the one place I was most scared to go. And it's reaped the best sort of results. Yeah. So as scary as it is, I type in a title anytime something comes up, or like the one thing I didn't do was when a musical thing would happen and whatever, when I'd imagine a musical thing, I wouldn't record it like I do now. Even a month ago.
You made a shift.
Yeah, there was some sort of shift that happened that forced me to kind of go, no, you splatter paint whenever you want to. whenever you feel like it, whenever it's there, you know, because it's never going to be a full, complete thought. But this year actually was the first time that I wrote a song by myself in 5 years. And only because I had not allowed myself to, not because it wasn't there. For me, yeah, I do. I capture whenever I can. I've got a long list of titles that in a random conversation, I'll just, if you see me pull out my phone, I'm not texting anybody or on Facebook. I'm legitimately kind of like ironing out this thought process and trying to chase it.
Thanks for sharing that, because, you know, that's important. Mm. You know, I think we see the product. Right? Mm, we see the product, which is the results of hours and hours and hours of
editing,
but the person that is actually creating, right? And I know a few professional writers who, you know, you talked about you found music. Well, it kind of found you, right?
Yeah.
It found you.
Yeah.
And they talk about their writing, and you can't believe what their output is. I mean, they write weekly, they write for national publications, they're writing books. You just can't, you know, how does that happen? And, you know, that same kind of question about, they write every day.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a piece of every day. Yeah. So then it becomes part of us, you know, addressing the blockage, addressing the things that are, and then saying, I'm going to put myself into this discipline, a little bit of a discipline mode, so energy has room to flow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Amen. I definitely have met one of the most inspiring writers in the last like month that works through that, the best that I've ever seen. And I've kind of, that's really inspired me to kind of push myself and be, you know, open, a little bit more open, because I do give myself more reasons not to than I do to try it.
So you're working on that.
Yeah, oh, for sure. It's an ongoing process.
Come back in a year and we'll do another podcast.
I think you'll hear it on the album.
Okay.
You'll hear it. You'll definitely hear the ebb and the flow. Like you'll hear one side and you'll hear the other side and you'll know the difference.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait now.
For sure.
That's wonderful. Okay. All right. So you had a wonderful quote that I read, is that you just love being on the stage with musicians.
Hmm.
Is that still true? It started out when you, that little Cajun accordion, you found a home. Is it just the best to do live music and get all tuned up and just hang with a crowd that is somewhat familiar and just have that moment?
Right? Yeah, because I always say at the end of the day, like when somebody makes me choose, do you want to be a writer or an artist? And I'm always like, well, as an artist, I can always ghost the writing part of it. I can always pretend that it's not me. And there's a loophole there because even in live performance, if I'm jamming, if I'm just like playing something brand new, if we're fresh out of the arrangement and we've gone into the unknown, I can still create there. Mm-hmm. And that is ironically, even though it's the most unsafe place in the world, because it's going to end up on YouTube, whether it's good or bad, it's still this, what I consider my safest place. Maybe not my safest place, but the place I'm more, most comfortable.
Happy.
Definitely happiest.
Happy counts. Happy counts big time.
And I think there's something inside me where, even though I try to filter myself, whether it's in interviews or in the writing process or just talking to somebody, there is something about on stage where you can't really filter yourself that much because people just walk away. Mm-hmm. People will know that you're not there, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing I love the most about the live performances. It's the jumping in. It's the diving into it.
You weren't too filtered in this interview, though, were you?
I've been working on it.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been entirely filtered, but there's definitely moments that I find myself running away from certain things.
But I think that's also personal integrity. There's certain things we share and things we don't, right?
Yeah.
But I hope you share what's next. So you said you get this album. When's this album coming out?
I can't say yet. Just because you would think with 150 songs written for it that we'd be done. But after writing the first three songs of this year, I realized that I've barely scratched the surface. And there's a well that's been opened now and it's flowing. So
you're working on it.
I'm just going to let myself keep writing because I do feel like there's something I haven't said yet that's very important to the entirety of the project. But a lot of it has been written. And I'm dying to get it out.
Oh, cool.
So.
And touring? Are you touring and gigging?
Kind of hope so. Yeah. I don't look, in my world, like in my mind, I can't look past like even next week.
Okay.
I have no idea. I know what I'm doing Monday just because I answered an email this morning, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. I kind of have to live that way. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think too much.
Yeah.
You know, worry about the future. You start planning. Planning is different from dreaming. Very different.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, it's always so inspiring to talk to an artist on the edge. It's great. It's really, really great.
Yeah.
So, and you live in Nashville?
I do. Yeah. Right? 10 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, NAMM Show will be in Nashville in June and we should catch up in June.
I would love that.
Okay.
That would be a great before and after.
Yeah. Really stay connected to your work and your career and your creative process, knowing that our community at NAMM is really inspired and interested in what you do. So, and you know, Nashville has come a long way with their music education program and to make sure you're connected to that community, and they have singing songwriting in the schools. Were you aware of that?
I am. I actually just got to work with a really cool Nashville School of the Arts. It was inspiring because walking through there the first time, we got to be a part of a renovation that happened in their like kind of studio slash music creative space. Cause that's something that I feel really passionate about, because the studio is my like ultimate safe place. I can mess up as many times as I need to figure it out. And we got to be a small part of a renovation there, and walking through the school the first time on the sort of before the pre was really inspiring, because the only thing I kept thinking was, I just so wish I had this in high school.
And that's exactly why we're working together. And
that's why you're here.
You know, that's exactly why
we need you.
Because you think if this pathway was just an experience for people, they don't have to go on and become a Grammy-nominated artist. That's maybe an option, but just the experience of knowing that process can be unfolded for people.
You know? Absolutely,
young people can have.
There's no one road for anybody who discovers music, and that's the beautiful thing. And I think that's the message we need to drive home the most.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here you are at your first NAMM show. No doubt, not your last.
Oh no.
We hope you would be with us.
No way.
We won't keep you another minute from going over and exploring that. Over almost 600,000 square, right?
You probably should.
So we thank so much Hunter Hayes for joining us. You want to mention us where they can find you and experience your music? And
yeah, absolutely. So well, we're everywhere you can find music. We've got actually some new stuff that came out a couple weeks ago. A song called This Girl, part of a trilogy. Anyway.
There's some very good YouTubes, too.
There's a couple of videos. Yeah, we're about to wrap it up, too, in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, the Pictures Trilogy is kind of everywhere. It's on YouTube. Two of the videos are on YouTube. All three songs are everywhere, Spotify, Pandora, Apple Music.
Name the songs.
So the three songs, it started last year. It's You Should Be Loved, Love You More, or More, because there was love in every title. And I was like, well, nobody's going to want to listen to that. But You Should Be Loved, More, and This Girl are kind of just the... what's the thing in the book? I don't read a lot of books. The thing in the book before you actually start
the
book?
Oh, the prelude.
Yeah,
That's in music, actually.
If you
the
will.
The prelude is the opening before the first act.
How appropriate is it that we call it that? Yeah,
okay.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, keep on keeping on. Come on.
Thank you.
The world needs your music.
That's very kind of you to say that.
The world needs
that.
Your energy and your openness. And let's stay connected.
Sounds great.
All right. So thank Hunter Hayes so much for being with us. My cool factor just went way up, spending a half hour with him. And thank you so much for joining us on Talking Up Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. Namm. That's Mary L-N-A-M-M.